Blog Talk Radio.
All right, race fans, y'all know what time it is. Hopefully, it's Race Chat Live. Hope you guys can hear me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, brother, man. I can hear you. Preach the good word.
Oh, my goodness gracious, Craig Moore. It's going to be a show here tonight. Of course, thank you for all you listeners that are out there, Mike Perricone and a couple more.
No pun intended.
Yep. Should have Mr. CJ Sports here in the studio. Man, you know, this is that time of year, Craig, where things, you know, just like every other sport, they start heating up toward the end of the year. We're into the playoff mode. It's Las Vegas week. We've just come off of Indianapolis, Craig Moore. What a great race. Man, it seems like this has been a year for NASCAR. I know we've got 10 races to go. But, man,
well,
we've already done
that.
26 races. 27 counting the All-Star, 28 counting the shootout.
29, so, 29 technically, because you got two races in the Bud shootout.
Yeah, you got the twin 125 qualifiers. So you know, we've been able to get NASCAR back on a good level, and I think that even the fans that have been ticked off over the last, they're really having to dig deep. To find something to bitch about this year. Of course, you know, everybody can bitch about Kyle Busch, but he's a winner. I think that Indianapolis was a little bit misunderstood. I mean, the fact of it is that place can hold 300,000 people, and 70,000 people were there. That would have been a sellout at about 9 different tracks on the Cup schedule. Yeah, it would be great to see 300,000 fans fill that place up for a NASCAR race, but we're in Indy country, Craig Moore. I think the race was successful. I think that it's a crying shame because obviously this is probably the first year since the inception of the Brickyard 400 that they actually had cool weather. It was unseasonably cool. Up at Indianapolis, you know, most of the time this race was the first week in August, so it always was pretty damn hot in the middle of America, especially in Indianapolis, Indiana, or Speedway, Indiana. You guys are familiar with the area. But, I mean, I could spend the whole show just talking about how great Indianapolis was and how long it's been since we thought Indianapolis was a great race. And, you know, it was a lot of action all the way around the track. I guess for those who are surprised that Kevin Harvick won, we're more surprised. What the hell took him so long, Craig?
Well, I think, and I want to apologize, I'm getting a cold and I got a scratchy throat. I've had a busy 2 weeks.
Yeah,
but,
I'm dealing with it too, Craig, so we'll work with this together, buddy. You'll hear me doing a lot of tonight, but
yep, that's what
we'll get through it.
I think it's great. I mean, but we all know Kevin Harvick came on early last year, and he's known as the closer for a reason, and he's gotten it done over the last handful of races, and, I mean, I think it's phenomenal, you know, and I think that team is, that four team is hitting its stride, and I think they're gonna be a definite threat all the way through the playoffs.
Yeah, all year long. Big three, you know, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick. We talked about it all year long last year. We at the beginning of the year through midseason, we said, "Where's Kevin Harvick? You know, where is he? Where's the performance at? When's he gonna get it tapped in?" And I'll be honest with you, Craig Moore, there's not much else going on. Ain't shit happening at SHR if it didn't come from Harvick, you know. But this is a crown jewel win.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, somebody said it earlier, and I think we somebody said it earlier in the week or late last week about the young drivers and how we put too much pressure on them to win. I think we put too much pressure on our veteran drivers who have performed year after year after year to come out of the box and win, fire off wins one after another. Everybody has a slump. You want to talk about slumps, and we're going to talk about this in a little while. I mean, it's no big surprise. We've said this all year. Jimmy Johnson, no wins in the first 26 races, because if he had a win, he would have been locked into the playoffs. You know, so he's got a lot of stuff to do in the next 10 races to build for 2020. Maybe in 2020, he'll have perfect vision, and he'll come back and win an 8th championship. But that's in February, so I digress. I just can't wait to the Super Bowl, because that means there's only 3 weeks to Speed Weeks. But I'm already counting it down. But, you know, we put too much pressure on our veterans, I think, to go out there and perform. And then we put too much pressure on our young guns to steal a phrase from Gillette from about 15 years ago, to go out and do the same thing. So,
well, Craig, what's so relevant about that, though, is because in most teams, there's 32 NFL teams, 32 Major League Baseball teams, and guess what happens when they play each other?
One wins, one loses.
There's 16 winners and 16 losers. NASCAR has one winner and 42 losers.
40 losers.
Well, I mean, it's 30. 36 now, but, you know, you get my point. Yeah, and, of course, there's a lot of pressure for these guys to win, and I didn't realize that we were going to jump into the Jimmy Johnson subject so fast.
We're not. I just wanted to give you – you've worked in radio. It's called a teaser.
Yeah.
It's called a teaser.
Well, you got me twirling my hair over here because I'm happy as a schoolgirl. But it's been long awaited to see the fall. The fall has really happened, you know. And speaking of fall, man, I don't know what the temperature is up there, Craig Moore, but we've hit 100 degrees today, man. It has been for 2 weeks.
Hold on, I'll tell you. It is 62 degrees right now. It is 62 degrees in Mayfield, New York.
Oh, my gosh. What I do for 62 degrees? Holy crap. Yeah, it's been 100. It's been lows in the, you know, lower 70s at night. It has been blistering hot. There's a high pressure sitting up on the top of it that they used to, I guess, slow down the hurricane last week, and it just kind of decided to stick around. And nevertheless, if you understand anything about weather, it was that high pressure that kept the hurricane Dorian off the coast of Florida. Heavy damage there in the Bahamas. Craig Moore, they said estimated 2,500 people missing. Our condolences and prayers to the people in the Bahamas and the Bahamian culture, and you know they're forever going to be changed after this horrible hurricane that just stalled on the top of them as the high pressure was built up around our area. But back to the fall of Jimmy Johnson, Craig Moore. It was a time to celebrate, but then all of a sudden today, after watching his show on Dale Jr. Download, it's amazing that you fiend for the fall, you fiend for it, man. You want them, you disgust it by the fact that every time he goes out there, he's a threat to win, and then all of a sudden he's finally given his dagger and he takes it with such class and style that you're almost like, I can't believe I rooted against this guy. Explain to me your true feelings about Jimmy Johnson, Craig. I'll give you a minute and shut up.
There is a first. What I think about Jimmy Johnson, it's like any sport. It doesn't matter whether it's the Dallas Cowboys, in the NFL, the Lakers in the NBA, the Yankees in the Major League Baseball, the Bruins in the NHL. When a team wins an awful lot, nobody likes them. They get tired of them winning. Why do you think Kyle Busch takes the bow when he wins? Because he knows it pisses people off.
That's right. I'm here to be your villain.
Right. Well, now Jimmy Johnson's gone 26 weeks without a win. He didn't make the chase for the first time in his career. Chris, in his career. That's astonishing. Well, you know what? He takes it in stride.
With class.
You know, he's like, okay, I didn't make it. It wasn't this race that we lost it. It was the other 25 races where we didn't secure it. We had 26 weeks to get a win, to get it done, to get stage points. We didn't do that. It's not one race that defines our season. It's the first 26. And when I heard him say that, and I'm paraphrasing, excuse me, I said to myself, he is absolutely right. He's not putting the blame on his crew chief. He's not putting it on his crew members. He's not putting it on himself. It was a collective fail. Because there is no I in team, except for if you look at the A. But there is no I in team. Collectively, they failed to get the job done. At the end of the day, he's the driver. Hey, he's got to be able to communicate. They got to be able to make changes. If they didn't understand each other, well, then they should have made a switch.
Well, I don't think Kevin Mendren was ever the right fit Jimmy Johnson. I think that was, let's swap crew chiefs and see what happens here, because we're taking away your, you know, Mr. Knauss is going to go over here to William Byron.
I never approved of the
Mendren idea. I think that, you know, Jimmy needed somebody a lot stronger. He needed a Jimmy Makar or a Tony Urie Sr. Jimmy needed somebody to transition to. Kevin Mendren hadn't proved anything at Hendrick Motorsports, and I think that means that Jimmy Johnson wasn't confident. It's hard for a true champion, Craig Moore, and hold your thought because I'm not trying to cut you off, but it's hard for a true champion to accept defeat, but it's also much harder for a true champion to point their fingers at anybody else. It is a collective bargaining. It is a team sport. And think about it. All seven championships was with Chad Knauss. Chad Knauss had proven to Jimmy Johnson that he could be trusted in. And so to see Jimmy not point the finger and not, you know, not only at himself, but, you know, seems to me that it lit a fire under him, Craig.
Absolutely. And I think that it's right. You're absolutely right when you say that a true champion accepts defeat and doesn't point fingers. Because as I said, and you reiterated, I'll say it again for those of you just joining us. A championship season, a championship running, making season is not in one race. It would have been had he made the chase, but then he probably would have been out after the Roval, as happened last year. So it's a collective sum of the 26 races. I think that missing the chase is going to fire up that 48 team. I guarantee you they will win a race by the end of the season.
No. Wow. And you know what? I honestly believe that Jimmy Johnson has looked at the other champions in this sport, be it Dale Earnhardt Sr., Jeff Gordon, Mark Martin, not a championship champion, but definitely one of the top drivers, top 25 drivers to ever race a race car. David Pearson, Kelly Yarbrough, all of these drivers had certain times in their career where they weren't performing at top level. we have got to understand that we cannot judge the fire that's inside Jimmy Johnson, because we don't know that he hasn't studied history and realized that there's a bounce back from this. There is a light at the end of the tunnel for true champions. They always find a way. Dale Earnhardt was, you know, resurging again after, you know, after the horrible 96 season. You know, he went out and he won the Daytona 500 in 98. He kind of had a couple of off years there, but, you know, the win at Talladega the year before he was killed, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Earnhardt's back, baby. He's back. So I think Jimmy still believes that he can win. And after his comments today from the Dale Jr. Download, he said that he's not lacking the fire to drive. And that's where complications start happening, Craig Moore, because his future may be in question at Hendrick Motorsports, but I don't think in Jimmy's eyes is his future in question, other than the fact that he wants to be in a race car. He wants the bounce back. He knows it, Craig. He's like, hey, Michael Jordan retired for 2 years, come back and won three more championships. You know, he retired again and come back with the Wizards, and it didn't work out for him. Brett Favre retired three times. He made it to a damn near a Super Bowl when they played the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, the New Orleans Saints, the year the Saints won. I think that Jimmy still has that fire, and he's going to be out to prove something different. Dale Jr., perfect example, right? How many people wrote off Dale Jr. in this sport? Kevin Harvick, 23 wins in, like, what, 13 years at Richard Childress Racing? He's got 25 wins in 5 years. That's fucking Stuart Haas, man. You know? I mean, resurgence is there, and I think that Jimmy Johnson understands that.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that he's going to come back, and he doesn't have a lifetime contract at Hendrick Motorsports, the last 9 years.
He does not.
And I think that that is by design of none other than not Mr. H.
No.
By Jeff Gordon.
He's protecting his empire.
Exactly.
Oh,
he
yeah.
owns part of that car.
Uh-huh.
He's not going to give someone better than him a lifetime contract.
And let's admit, Jimmy proved more out there than Gordon did. That's hard
Absolutely.
To say. I mean, you know, when we look back on Jimmy Johnson's career, as we're reflecting now, and the most positive thing that we've ever said about Jimmy Johnson is coming right here and right now on this show, I'm just, you know, I think the bounce back is going to be huge for this guy. I really do, and I don't think that he's finished, and I think that he's out to prove people wrong. You've seen it before. You know, Peyton Manning gets traded to Denver or goes to Denver. He wins the Super Bowl. You know, he was mad, man. He wanted to retire a Colt. Well, he had something to prove. Went to 2 Super Bowls in 3 years in Denver, you know, in 3 Super Bowls in 4 years or something to that effect.
Yeah. No, I think that this is the fire that Jimmy needs, and you kind of gave me a whoa when I said that when we began this, but I really think that this is the fire that Jimmy needs under his ass and the crew to go out and win a race, maybe 2 in the last 10. Any of these drivers that did not make the chase win a race, it throws a whole bunch of shade on those points.
Yeah,
and they matter. Every point, every position is a point. And, you know, when this chase system, when this point system first started in NASCAR with the chase and the bonus points and this and that, they always had bonus points, but they had them differently back 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
whoever leads the most laps and
Right. You got 5 bonus points for that. And then you got 5 bonus points for, you know,
leading
if you kiss your nose the right way. And now these points, every position on the track is a point. And I'll admit, when it first started, I was like, oh, this is ridiculous. They're going to make this sport hard to follow like they do freaking football when it gets into the playoffs. This guy's got to hope to win, or if he loses, he's got to hope for a loss by this one. This system is easy. Win and you're in. They don't have that ruling in any other sport but NASCAR. There is no guarantee that if the New York Jets, who lost to the Buffalo Bills, by the way, by 1 point, and I'm not a football fan, but that had to be disheartening for Jets fans. But that one win by the Buffalo Bills, who can never get it done in the Super Bowl, it was proven 4 years in a row, that win did not secure them a spot in the playoffs. NASCAR is the only sport that does that.
Right.
That is huge, to paraphrase the local car dealer around here.
And Craig, I think this is really the first year since the Win and You're In campaign started that we didn't have an outside the top 16 locked in. In other words, Chris Buescher, what was the one last year? AJ Allmendinger a couple of years ago. Somebody outside that top 16. We had somebody win a championship, I believe, in the Win and You're In the very first year, and that was Kyle Busch. He didn't even race maybe 16 races, 20 races that year. I'm not really sure.
But he was definitely not
in the top 16. So since the inception, every year we've had this wild card. Austin Dillon was the name I was looking for just a minute ago. But Craig Moore, we've had somebody locked in from the outside. So really we've taken either the top 14 or the top 15 drivers since the inception of this new Win and You're In system. So for it to even come down to the 16th place and the 17th place car, they could have been out of the playoffs a long time ago. They could have been mid-season already out of the playoffs. It was just by chance that nobody outside the 16 this year had gotten a win. And so that opened the door for there to be a battle for the 15th and 16th position for the last race of the year, man. Had there been a couple of winners from outside of there, it would have been a totally different chase. As far as I'm concerned, it would probably have been sewed up 2 weeks ago.
Well, not only that, but going on, and I think we have Mr. Stat in the studio right now. Stats, are you here?
Yes, sir.
I know. All right, I knew he was here. I could hear him breathing in the background. What do you think about – tell us what you think about the shock of Jimmy Johnson not making the chase. I mean, it's really not much of a shock. If you listen to the show over the last 35 weeks, we pretty much told you that Jimmy was not going to make the chase this year. And despite a couple of good runs.
I, for a long time, have said it going back to like last year. I really think the first time they messed with they messed with success. When that guy, and I can't think of the crew member, it wasn't Ganaus, but that guy that was
Steve
on his
something. It was Steve
over
something.
Over the wall team. I think his first name was Ron. That's when in my estimation it went down. Or it started to go down. I said, maybe we're not going to know who this guy is or a lot of what he did, whether he was a tire carrier or what it was. But I remember way back when I said that they shouldn't mess with success. And since that, he's just never been as strong. It's not that Jimmy doesn't know how to drive, but something got knocked out of whack. I don't know what it is, but it's just, when you take things out and change them and you're not sure what you're getting in the change, that's where you start having problems.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mike's dead on. I think it was a car chief or a chief engineer. Mike Berg on, huh?
Yep, something like that. Some title like that. But I'm not. I think the guy's first name was Ron, but I'm not too sure about that. But you're right, Chris. It's either the car chief or somebody in power like that on that level.
Well, part of the question there, Paracon Stats, is that is there going to be a bounce back? Right. I mean, that's after listening to him. And listening to his explanation why the team wasn't able to perform, obviously he's still very confident in himself that he can still get the job done. We made a lot of reasons why Jimmy Johnson can't make it, but let's start focusing now on the reasons why we think Jimmy Johnson will bounce back.
Again, I never said Jimmy forgot how to drive. I don't think it's on him, but you start messing with the people around him that he's been successful with, and there's a whole learning process. And I don't think that team was prepared for the changes. I really don't. Whether it was somebody not working in. On, you know, what their ultimate job was or unfamiliarity, but all of a sudden you took somebody, you know, a group that was totally familiar for 7 championships and worked like, you know, this much, and you changed it. And I think there was something inherently, I won't say wrong, but how they went about it was wrong. I really think so.
Trey?
Yeah, sorry, I was walking outside to see what the weather was like outside. God, the major changes need to happen in Jimmy Johnson's camp, and it has. But I think now that the pressure is. Now that the pressure is off, as I said 10 minutes ago, 12 minutes ago, I really think that you're going to see an improved 48 team, and I stand by my conviction that they will reel off a win, or possibly two, by the time we get to Miami Homestead. If they reel off 2 wins, that totally, totally screws the points up.
So there's still a factor in the fact of Jimmy Johnson and his story downfall. We watched this could be the end, and I may just be a hopeful fanatic over here in the closet fanatic. I mean, I love to hate New England. I love to hate the Yankees. So I've had teams that I've pulled against for, almost in every sport. I guess I'm just going through changes or something, Craig.
Wait a minute. Let me ask you a
Jimmy
question.
Johnson. I do.
Are you going through menopause? Because you seem to be bitching an awful lot.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, you tell me. You're the old fart sitting at the table, so what is it?
Well, it could be. But I got to ask you a serious question. You're from Mississippi. Why do you hate the Yankees? It's not like you guys have a professional baseball team in Mississippi, for God's sake.
I've been a Braves fan since, from get-go. Of course I got to follow the team that's closest to the house. And I have ties to Georgia. My mother was a resident. She was born here but moved to Georgia as my son lives about 65 miles south of Atlanta. So there's a connection there, of course, and I've been to Braves games. I was always a Braves fan, always. And I love to hate the Yankees. I love to hate the Yankees because
anytime a baseball season started, the first thing that you wanted was you wanted to play the Yankees in the World Series. That was, you know, you wanted to play the best team that George Steinbrenner could buy. You had home
grown
talent from right
there. Let's move on from baseball and Chris's infatuation with Ted Turner.
It was a very odd fella, Craig Moore. Very odd fella. It read some documentary on Ted Turner. He'll probably surprise you on a few things.
No, I'm going to. I'm actually getting ready to read a book now called The 10X Factor by Brett Cardone. But let's move from a story to because Jimmy Johnson not making the chase was the biggest story of the week until Tuesday.
Oh, man, it would have to be Bubba Wallace, right? Bubba Wallace
no,
was the story.
No, screw Bubba Wallace.
What?
Not really. I don't really want to, but screw Bubba Wallace. And let's go to the other story of the week.
Well, no, let's wait. Is there one better than the Matt Diamandesa story?
Well, that's where I'm going.
Yeah,
if you give me a second.
Right.
If you give me a second, you suffer from premature story ejaculation. I swear to God.
I cannot believe you said that word on the radio. But, yeah, I mean,
you
guys
dropped the F-bomb earlier, so be quiet.
Well, you followed it up.
3 weeks ago at Bristol, he gets out of the car. He's crying. He just found out he's going to lose his ride at the end of the year. Doesn't know what he's going down to do. Taylor's upset. I changed his wife's name. Glad they don't listen to the show. Changed his wife's name. It is Taylor. She's upset. Not sure what they're going to do. He's going to be out of the ride after Miami.
Heartbreak Ware was looking for a driver.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about that in the next couple of weeks.
Go ahead.
Lo and behold, earlier this week, it is announced that Matt DiBenedetto is going to be taking over the famed 21 Wood Brothers Ford. He will be back in the Blue Oval family. You will be able to sleep at night, and he will be able to feed his family because, as he said on Motor Mouth last night, he is not wealthy.
Well, about any time. You know, Matt, he's earned it the hard way, man. You know, he had to bring money to the table in order to race and get his career going. He's had to make some leaps of faith. And, you know, I really think that he wanted it to work out for TRD. But remind you, where Denny Hamlin at Bristol said, car owners, if you're looking for a driver and you don't hire this guy, quote, you are an idiot.
Yes.
Wood Brothers took it to heart, man. And Paul Menard's the real reason why Matt Diamandetto's in that car. And I applaud Paul Menard. He's been joked about, and I swear, Craig, I looked at his stats when he announced his retirement. He's got like, I don't know, 25 top 10s and 5 top 5s in his whole career. I didn't realize that Paul Menard's stats were that bad. But, you know, kudos to Menard for stepping up. And, you know, he's one of those who's been racing off of daddy's money. He put his money where his mouth is. He said, look, Matt Diamandetto needs to get in this car. And the Wood Brothers never blinked. They went straight to him.
Yeah,
and
the thing about Matt is every move that he's made isn't a lateral move. Like, in the workforce, normally, if you leave a job, because you're going to another job, you it's a lateral move with hopes that it's going to be an upward move. Matt signed with Go Fast or Go Slow, depends on how you rate them. And then he took a leap of faith and left them. He was betting on himself. Huge, 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 stupid move for the most part when you think about it. Then he signs with LFR, and that deal comes to an end. As I said a couple of minutes ago, he and Taylor had no idea what they were going to do. When that ride came to an end at Bristol, he didn't have a ride figured out. He was hoping. He was hoping. But every one of those, and I hate to use the word lower-tier drivers, because Matt is not. He's a very talented wheelman. They're auditioning for the next big ride. Just like, you know, we hope that our bosses recognize what we do come paycheck-wise, pay time. I speak from experience. We hope that our bosses realize what we're doing and compensate us accordingly come raise time. Well, when he gets the blessing of Paul Menard and the Wood Brothers jump on him and Denny Hamlin, what more do you need than Denny Hamlin to go on national TV and say, car owners, if you don't hire this guy, you're an idiot. I mean, what else do you need?
That's a solid loss.
I mean, it's almost equivalent to Michael Jordan saying the same thing about Allen Iverson or someone of that stature. You know, listen, hire this kid. Hire this guy. Take a chance. You won't regret it. And I think that that's what they did. And I think that it's really going to pay dividends for Wood Brothers. Now, the one thing I thought was classy, one of the guys on the interview, I think it was on Motormouth last night, I was watching it. I'm never home on Wednesday nights, and if I am, I'm usually busy, so I can't call in. And besides, NASCAR gets the first call every week anyway. The one guy said, well, we hope you go out and get the 150th win for Wood Brothers, or the 100th win for Wood Brothers. And he said, no, I kind of hope Paul gets that.
Yeah, right.
And I thought to myself, that is classy, because he could have said, oh, thank you very much, I hope so too. Instead, no, he said, I hope Paul can get it done in the next 10 races. In other words, what he was saying was, I will do my best to get their 151st win, but I want Paul to get their 100th, or their 101st win, I want Paul to get their 100th.
Right.
So, right, I mean, that shows what kind of a class act both guys really are.
And once again, there's dollar signs behind all this, Craig. Menards is a very big sponsor of the sport, has been for a long time. Paul Menard stepping out of the sport, you wonder if that, you know, is still going to happen, you know, if the money's still going to be there. Because John Menard, Paul's father, invested a lot of money into IndyCar. And Paul Menard had a very short, brief career as an IndyCar driver. That's where he started at before he became a developmental driver at DEI, Dale Earnhardt Incorporated. So, you know, you kind of worry that, oh, Paul Menard's leaving, but he reassured everybody, look, my money's going to be here. I'm stepping out of the car, and I want Matt Diamondetto to be my replacement. And guess what? I'm still going to write a check to you guys next year. Everybody's happy, brother. That's a big-time money boost for the Wood Brothers team. I don't think that without one of those partners that, you know, fortunate enough as Menards right now, without that major sponsor, the 21 car may not be a competitive ride, you know. And so, but I like Matt Diamondetto's response that, he, you know, this is the first time that he's got teammates, so to speak. But reality says he doesn't have teammates. He's in a Wood Brothers shop. The car is mostly prepared by the time it gets to the shop before race week. It's prepared at the Penske shop. So, you know, you have the right engineers and the right workers building your cars. But there is a connection there with Joey Logano, Ryan Blaney, and Brad Keselowski. And so he'll be able to feed off of those notes and have somebody to turn to. But it was very interesting that he said, you know, he's always kind of been the lead guy at the car. But even at BK Racing, you know, of course, Fast Lane Racing, he was a one-car team. And this year with Bob Levine, he's in a one-car team. So
It'll add a little bit of extra pressure, but he'll also be able to feed off of some really good drivers. And I expect him to fit in really well over at Wood Brothers Racing. That's, they're a very humble family, as Kyle Petty said in Motor Mouse yesterday. I got to watch it myself. And so, it's going to be a great fit. Mike, Stats, what's your comments, of course, on the breaking news this week that Paul Menard steps out and Matt Diamandetto, Matty D, will step into the 21 Wood Brothers car next season?
I was happy for him. I just, as far as Menard, if you look at, like you mentioned, how many top fives and top tens or 25 top tens or whatever it was, he just wasn't, I can remember like maybe one race that he won in Cup and one in the lower series, as far as whether it was called Xfinity at the time or Busch or whatever. I can remember like two times when he won in each, in each division. And so he really didn't have the thing that had him in the car, in my view, was that Menard, the name. He really wasn't, if it had been anybody else, he probably would have been out of that car long ago. And, but I'm happy for Matt. I'm happy for, Matty D. I to see him get a break like that.
Yeah, a great break for a guy who's, 3 years ago, we didn't even know how to pronounce his last name. I think that Matt kind of come on the scene at Bristol maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was, with the costume that he might have had or something. Was it at Bristol? It was a Halloween outfit. I'm not sure. But he had made it funny, and people kind of realized, hey, this guy, we can't pronounce his last name. He's in the sport. I wonder how long he'll last. Must come for money. There's a lot of, I never remembered him being in a Joe Gibbs car before he wound up at BK Racing. So I didn't recollect any races that he had raced beforehand. I'd never heard of the last name before in my life. And, he come on the scene and I was like, hey, this guy's going to be up for a few minutes and then he's going to be gone. But Matt Diamandetto, Matty D, has found a way to stay alive in this sport. It's crucial, man. I mean, it's critical. These guys, only a few of the drivers actually get the chance to get in a top tier ride. And as you said, Craig, I hate to call them bottom dwellers. I hate to call them second tier teams. But there's a separation in those who have funding and those who don't. Matty D won't have that to worry about anymore. And hey, maybe he'll go out there and buy his mom and dad a house and I'm sure a new Ford Raptor and start living the life of an accomplished racer. And something that all those guys on the garage dream for if they haven't already succeeded.
I hope not. I hope that he keeps living the life that he's living.
Well, I mean, Denny Hamlin has the biggest house of all the drivers, and he's one of the most humble drivers. I don't think the size of the house or the toys make the difference in the driver. I think that Jeff Gordon was stuck up long before he ever made his first $1 million in racing. He was stuck up his whole career. Matty D has been the exact opposite. He's been very humble. He's been a personality in a sport that lacked thereof for several years, Craig. So, like I said, once again, kudos to Matty D. They definitely broke the internet with the announcement, and it was funny. Wood Brothers said, "We've got something that you probably haven't guessed," and that right there, what they said, made me love talking about silly seasons so much in the months of May and June. We've had Miss Lee and several other people have always asked Chris, why do y'all talk about silly season? What are you so fascinated with silly season for? It's moves like this, Craig Moore. It's moves like this. We've come up with almost any and every scenario. We've talked about from one side of the mountain to the other. But none of us put Matt Diamandetto
in that 21 car for next year. So, hey, man, that's if you wonder why we talk about silly season, about the drop of the green flag in the Daytona 500, there you go. That's the reason why, because this sport proves every year that it's unpredictable, man. It's unpredictable.
All right, so I didn't get a chance to watch it because I had a wedding meeting tonight. But the burnout on the boulevard, how did that go? Did you watch it?
I knew nothing about it. I watched about 30 minutes of, I guess it was NASCAR America. I'm trying to think. No, it was Dale Jr. Download. I'm sorry. With Jimmy Johnson. I got to watch about 30 minutes of that. But outside of that, I had no idea that there was even a burnout. Bad job, NASCAR, for making sure that a number one fan in the sport didn't know anything about the media day. So, hey, I mean, I knew about the media day, but I didn't know about the burnout session. So, hey, whoops.
Yeah, I heard about it earlier today. I thought I heard about it last night on Motor Mounts, but I was half in and half out of consciousness, and then I had seen it something on it about Facebook today, and I was like, oh, crap, I think that's tonight. Well, sure enough. Now, tonight, they are, or something weird is happening this weekend, and maybe you can explain it to us. I don't quite understand it. We're not qualifying Friday. We're not qualifying Saturday. We're qualifying Sunday morning and racing Sunday afternoon. What is the, and I don't know, so I'm relying on you. What is the premise behind that?
NASCAR trying certain things. Normally Sunday morning is reserved for sponsor time. That's when your sponsors show up to the racetrack and you have, your driver available so that they can pet the sponsors and you know, the special little events that each of these, you know, teams and drivers and sponsor marketing teams put together, whether it be signing autographs for children in the hospital or shaking the hands of an employee of Exalta that's been there for, you know, 45 years or something. So normally that's a time that's designated for the driver and the marketing people. I think the NASCAR wants to have two races in 1 week. So basically, I mean, they already raced two races in 1 week if you count from the times to the next race. But they want to be able to squeeze in a midweek race. And so trying the qualifying on race day, I told them, you know, Las Vegas, really, like, that's the track where we're going into the playoffs at. You want as much TV coverage as you can get. So I just kind of, I don't understand it. I'm not for it. I think that, the one great thing about our sport is those cars sit in a garage for, you know, almost 24 hours, sometimes less. You know, sometimes they qualify in the evenings, race in the daytime. But for the most part, they qualify on Friday, and then, you know, they have a couple of practices, and then set Sundays, you know, just for the race. So I'm not sure of this move here, and I'd like the thoughts from you and from Paracon, our staff, how y'all feel about it. I think that that's not needed. I think that that should be the time for the drivers to connect with fans and sponsors and marketing crews and stuff to that effect.
Well, I honestly think that on race day, and that the drivers should not meet with their marketing partners. I think that they need to focus on the race, and, you know, meetings with their crew chief, meetings with their owners, meetings with drivers inside their own stable, and how they can best work together to further the agenda of not just the teams, but of the whole company for the day. So I think taking them away for meaningless meetings or handshaking, kissing baby opportunities is totally ludicrous. But now, if it is a serviceman or one or a person with
an illness, that's one thing. But to go out there and shake hands and you know, of an employee that's been there 45 years, thank you for your service and dedication to our company, and we really appreciate your sponsor. That can be done on Saturday. I really think that they should – I really think that on Sundays it should be 100% focused on the race team and the job at hand, which is bringing the checkered flag and securing your spot either into the next round or the first playoff spot.
So are you for or against same-day qualifying?
Am I for or against same-day qualifying? I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't think it gives you enough time to make changes to your car if you're off in qualifying. If they're not going to let you touch your car for the rest of the day, you're screwed. So I don't like it. I think qualify late Saturday if there's not an Xfinity race. And then if you're able to make the changes, make the changes. If you're not, then you're not. But you know that going in. Sunday morning qualifying, which Sunday morning qualifying is 9 o'clock or probably 12 o'clock our time, 9 o'clock their time, race time at 3 o'clock our time, and noon their time. It doesn't give them much chance to make changes if needed. So, no, I don't like the idea. I took you to Boston to give you the answer.
Yeah, I mean, but I agree, man. I mean, it's just, it's ludicrous. It's crazy. The drivers don't get a chance to party and mingle with the crowd on Saturday night because they'll have to be in a race car fairly early in the morning. And of course, we get the later start times because it is the chase. I just kind of wonder why this, you know, Las Vegas has lights, right? They have lights. They're in the desert, so you don't have to worry about rain. There's absolutely no reason at all to push qualifying to the day of race day at Las Vegas. I just kind of don't get it. Maybe we'll get a better explanation from Stats. Stats, have you been able to follow up on this, or is this new to you?
Normally, I don't like it, but I'll take an educated guess because I saw something on the weather for the 3 days. Starting Friday, temperatures are not supposed to be in the 90s. Now, that's not a lot for the desert, but the next 2 days are like 102 and 103. So I think they're trying to, you know, save, you know, like the earlier in the day when there's less heat. It's not the heat of the day. That would be my only guess as far as why they're doing it at Las Vegas. But normally I don't like it either.
Yeah, I'm totally against it. Look, if you know, we're at a place like Martinsville or Richmond. You have a race on, you know, say, qualified on Saturday, race on Sunday. Those are your only 2 days on the track to go to a race at maybe Bristol or, like I said, Richmond and Martinsville. They're real close together. So, you know, Charlotte, any of those areas in midweek form, you know, you kind of just bounce from there. You take 2 days off. You show up on Wednesday. You qualify on the same day, you race that night, and then on Saturday you go to Pocono. You know, I mean, I get what they're trying there, and I think that they're just trying to fill out the logistics. I just don't understand, once again, why you would do this for the first chase race of the season. It seems like you would want everything to go as normal and not any kinks in the road, because obviously when you're talking about race cars on a racetrack, anything can happen. Speaking of which, we'll get back to the Bubba Wallace subject. Anything can happen. Bubba Wallace finished third in Indianapolis. Who would have guessed that?
Me.
And then he sits there and makes it out like he can drive a race car. Can you believe that? I mean, the audacity of this guy comes out and says, yeah, who do you think can drive a race car? Well, I think it was probably a souped-up motor from the Richard Childress shop, and y'all got away with it.
Well, what do you expect him to say? Gee, we got lucky.
Yeah, that's exactly what you got, Bubba Wallace Jr.
Well, yes, but you missed my question.
Did you expect him to say that?
I mean, yeah, of course, Bubba is, well, he's an interesting character. I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to be misunderstood here. He's very I think that there's a side of Bubba that he doesn't show for TV. Let's just put it like that. And that can be misunderstood in so many different ways. But I'm telling you, there's certain people that put on a certain face in front of TV, and they're not really that way in person. I think that Bubba doesn't realize that he, in this sport, nothing's given to you on a silver platter. You got to go out there and earn it, and crying all the time because he has lack thereof doesn't get you anywhere, because the ones who do make it are like Matt Diamandetto, who at one time had to ask some friends to help him get to a race, right? But he did it in dignity, he did it in respect, and it paid off, right? Well, Bubba Wallace crying and talking about mental health issues and all this other stuff because he's in a crappy ride, it's beyond pathetic. And then, you know, instead of thanking the Richard Petty Motorsports team for giving him a great car, Richard Childress for a great motor, he decided to say, hey, I'm a good driver, okay? Why? Because you didn't wreck this week? Your thoughts, guys. We'll make it quick.
No, I think that he should have kept his mouth shut and thanked everybody for a good ride and left it at that.
Yeah, I mean, his pit crew obviously gave him good pit stops. You know, I mean, there was plenty of people to thank there for being successful in one race since Daytona of last year.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. When I get off Saturday mornings to go do the swap shop on our local radio station, which is like a yard sale thing on our local radio AM station, I get off the air each week and I play back the show because I record it. And I make sure that I thank the people that I need to thank, the sponsors first and foremost, and the radio station, and then Miss Dana for putting up with me getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But he didn't do any of that. And I'm the first to tell you that I'm not the greatest radio guy in the world, and I'm not the greatest DJ in the world. I'm humble. Bubba Wallace did not sound humble in at all. He sounded like a spoiled little brat who needed to be put over his mama's knee and whipped with a cane. A little harsh. Well, I say tomato, you say tomato. But I'm interested to hear what Stats has to say.
Yeah, I think all the times I heard him speak or be interviewed, he comes off wrong sometimes. Sometimes he comes off classy. Other times he just, I don't want to say maybe says the wrong thing in the wrong way or doesn't say the right thing at all. Like you say, thanking your sponsors and whatever. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, especially with the team he's on, if Richard Petty, of all people, didn't take him aside and talk to him about it, if it became a big issue. Maybe 1 week, not so much, but if he continues to do it, I could see Richard Petty taking him aside and having a little talk with him.
Well, I think Richard's had quite a few talks with him this year with the amount of race cars he's wrecked.
Yeah, and the fact of it is that somebody donated the money to that car to even run this year. It's not even a real sponsorship. It was somebody that took $10 million out of his own pocket because they wanted to see Bubba Wallace stay in that car. And there's finally some success within the team, Craig and Stats. And the first thing he does is he wants to point at himself. It's me, it's me, it's me. Well, that's fine. Then if it was you this week, then who the hell was it the last, 62 weeks that you raced for Richard Petty Motorsports? Obviously, everything worked for you this week, and including the crew chief, including Richard Petty Motorsports, including your sponsor that donated the money for you to drive, the Victory Junction Gang on the side of the race car, which is, of course, a Petty-owned charity. You had a golden opportunity to sit there and humble yourself and and show appreciation and show that you belong in this sport. And we got, you know, the star is born, Bubba Wallace. Look at here. Look at what I did. Look at what I was able to accomplish.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean, I'm sorry, that doesn't endear him to too many people.
That's the thing, guys, that I think he did it on the wrong week, as Chris said, with Victory Junction on the side, where you could have, you know, mentioned the kids and that, this, that, and everything that goes with it, and instead you chose to turn the spotlight on yourself. And so for that reason alone, he did it on the wrong week.
Yeah, and once again, if Bubba Wallace was offered a ride tomorrow with another organization that he thought would be more competitive to Richard Petty Motorsports, he would drop Richard Petty Motorsports on a dime and jump ship. And that's, you know, once again, you don't have a driver who's dedicated to his own team. He's literally shopping himself to the other teams, and hey, that's fine. That's part of the game, right? But at that moment in time, you shop yourself for the next 365 days. But in that moment in time, you make sure that you thank the people that made this happen for you.
Well, I think that's where a lot of people in that position. Well, I shouldn't say a lot of people, because Matty D didn't do it at Bristol. He didn't do what Bubba Wallace did. He made sure to thank the people that got him there and put him in position.
There's a piece of humble pie, Craig Moore. Great job. Great job for pointing that. You got a guy standing there crying because he feels like he failed his team because he didn't get the win. And then you got a guy saying, look at me, look at me. I finished third this week. I'm a good driver.
Exactly. He didn't do crap the first 25 weeks. He finished his third. Now he wants a Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, we'll see how well he runs at Vegas this week. Of course, the Vegas is this week. I think that probably Kyle Busch is the one favored. We'll get to the Vegas odds here. I'll get them pulled up. See if I can find them. Go ahead and take the wheel there for a minute.
All right, I'm going to pick the winner right now in the Las Vegas race. I'm not even going to wait for you. Are you ready?
Bubba Wallace. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding. Bubba Wallace is going to be the first one wrecking. Kyle Busch is going to do it as he's lapping him. I'm going to go with Kyle Busch is going to win your race. He's a hometown boy. He performs well at Las Vegas, and I think that's going to be your winner. And we're going to have, hopefully next week we could have Jason back. I know he's out in Ohio seeing his mommy, and I love that. He's fixing to move back there in a couple of weeks. But hopefully we'll have him on next week. We can do a little roundtable discussion. But before we go any further, next week on the show, we are going to have a personal friend of Dana and mine, Luke Rakowski, is going to join us. And he is putting on, and Chris, I'll send you information about this, he is putting on a lawnmower racing event. That's, I don't know how big that is down in Tumsumum, but here in upstate New York, that's a pretty big deal. There's a lawnmower racing association. And Luke decided that this year he was going to put on his promoter's hat and try his hand at promoting. And we're super excited for that. I believe that's October 12th. He's going to tell us more about that next week. He's going to join us at the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. And so we're going to talk next week. We're going to talk everything that happened in the and the Cup Series and the Truck Series, because they're out in Las Vegas this weekend. I'm not sure about it. I'm not sure about Xfinity, where they're at, if it's a triple header weekend. But
it is
a triple header weekend. Okay.
Where at?
So everybody's in Vegas this weekend.
Oh, everybody's in Vegas this weekend. Okay. Where are we racing next weekend? Anybody know?
I don't.
36 shows a year, 40-something shows a year, and we don't even know the scheduled race for next week. I swear to God, we drop the ball sometimes. we'll worry about next week when it, the week after next when it gets here. Kyle Busch is the favorite to win, a 9-2 odds, guys. Brad Keselowski is the second favorite. He's a 5-1, along with Kevin Harvick, a 5-1 odd as well. Interesting. Jimmy Johnson is a 50-1 odd to win. Also, Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., and Joey Logano follow up behind Kevin Harvick, Keselowski, and Kyle Busch.
But imagine that for a minute. Imagine that for a second, if you will.
I thought earlier in the episode when you said that, you know, the biggest news of the week, I really thought that you were going to joke about Elliott Sadler making his final race attempt of his career this weekend in Cala Racing, the number 10 car. He's actually favored 100-1 to win this weekend as he makes his bon voyage. His
final.
Exit. Yeah, his final lap in NASCAR competition. Any thoughts on Elliott Sadler, guys?
Elliott who? You mean Chase Elliott? Who the hell cares about Elliott? I can't win an Xfinity championship, Sadler.
I'm gonna
take my ball and go home because I can't win anymore. But oh yeah, by the way, I want to come back and race 2 races. Now the same can be said about Dale Jr. and I understand that. Dale Jr. left because of health reasons.
So he says.
But I don't know. It doesn't. It's not as exciting for me with Elliott Sadler running his last race. He ran his last race a couple years ago. Did we even miss him? Hell, I didn't even know he was running this weekend. Or attempting to run. So what does that tell you? You know, what does that tell you? It tells you that he's insignificant.
Guys,
go ahead.
Daytona next week.
That's right.
I just looked it up. Yep.
Thanks. That's why stats is stats, because he looks up stats for us. So Jimmy Johnson is a 50-1 odds. Elliott Sadler is 100-1 odds. If I had to pick one of those two, I sure as hell wouldn't pick Elliott Sadler.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that Jimmy Johnson is going to come out strong this week, but I think he's going to falter this week, and he'll come back next week at Daytona.
So with Daytona, wow. I mean, you know, that's the mix-up in the chase there. Of course, Daytona going to the last race of the regular season next year. Daytona? I thought we already raced Daytona.
That's what it says on the schedule, Chris.
I thought that's the 2020. This is 2019.
No, if you look on NASCAR.com, when it says next race after Las Vegas, you'll see it, Daytona.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give dead air time as we frantically go to our devices to verify this. I mean, I'm pretty sure we raced at Daytona for the 4th of July.
Yeah, we did. It could be a blip on NASCAR.com site, which could very well happen.
Yeah.
But, no, getting back to this week in Las Vegas, I think that I think it's going to be a competitive
Well, excuse me, I think it's going to be a competitive race the whole way around. But I think Kyle Busch is gonna smack Kevin Harvick around and say, listen, it's my turn to win. And then, you know, the hometown will go nuts. You won't hear very many people boo out in Las Vegas for Kyle Busch winning. So
yeah, it's Richmond, guys. We're going to Richmond. September 21st. And we'll be at Richmond. So and after that, it'll be the Roval.
I see it. My calendar was messed around. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So we got that fixed. That's one error of the show here tonight. So our idiot moment, it's okay. Everybody has one every now and then. Christopher Bell, another big name in the news. Of course, Eric Jones will stay at the 20 car. This will put Christopher Bell in the 95 machine, which we knew that already. It seems like the second coming of Jesus Christ with Christopher Bell. He's going to a mediocre to mid-tier team. I think that there will be some extra funding and some backing, probably some better race cars than what Levine Racing has put out up to date. But at the same time, this seems like a lot of hype. Of course, we were hyped about Jones. We were hyped about Logano. We were hyped about several of these drivers. I don't see Christopher Bell busting down the seams and winning a championship or being, you know, even in the top, considered in the top five, top ten when he breaks in next year. He is the favorite right now to win this weekend in Las Vegas, though. So Christopher Bell in the 20 car is the favorite to win the Xfinity Series at Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
Well, hold on. Let me ask you something, Chris.
Okay.
Let me ask you something. Because I want your thoughts on this, because I think it could have went differently. If Jones did not win last week, would there be a car swap and Bell to the 20 and Jones to the 95? I say absolutely.
I think that it would be denied by Joe Gibbs, but being that he is referred to as Coach Gibbs, he understands that there's motivation behind the win. And so, the moment that he won, I think that Joe Gibbs was waiting for him to prove that he could win in that car. And, you know, I don't know. Call it a coincidence that he signed the contract days after that win, but I really see it as, it was a strategy move anyway, and I believe Joe Gibbs really thought about putting Eric Jones over in the 95 car. I think that based off of Eric Jones' interview and his victory lane, that he even thought he was exiting the Joe Gibbs race shop and headed down the road to Bob Levine's shop. So, Eric Jones got the job done, man, and Joe Gibbs rewarded him for it. So who knows what Joe had, what coach had in plan. He may have been up in the air on what to do, and that was the proving point. I do find it non-coincidental that the contract was signed almost immediately after Eric Jones picked up the win at Darlington. I mean, you know, look, you reward the guy. He broke through. He won at a tough racetrack. It wasn't a gimme. He proved that he was the best driver out there that night, and for that, he was rewarded. So we'll see how long this lasts. I don't feel comfortable with a one-year deal at Joe Gibbs Racing. I don't think that gives Eric Jones any more confidence, because straight from the first drop of the green flag next year, he will be working for the next 6 months to get in that car again. And that puts a lot of pressure on these young guys, man. It puts a lot of pressure, and they make decisions that are not necessarily for the best interest of the long haul. They're looking for a quick result for their contract. And that's a lot of pressure, man. Give them a 3 or 4 year contract. And if you need to buy them out early, well, buy them out early, coach. You've signed football players throughout your NFL career that didn't make the squad, you know, and had to be cut midseason. So, you know, I know in NASCAR they can't waste too much money, but I don't believe they're paying Eric Jones that much money regardless. So it seems like Christopher Bell is the second coming of Jesus. Is there any thoughts on that subject?
No, I mean, I think that they're hoping that Jones does not have a good 2020, and they can promote Bell up there, and hopefully that he'll bring, as you say, he's the second coming of Jesus Christ, and he will bring that 20-car championship. I don't see it happening. I don't see him doing well in the 95 car. I do agree with you that that will bring the number 95 car a lot better funding. It might even bring in a lot better sponsorship, which in turn brings a lot better money. But I don't think that it's going to be anything to write home about. I think that he's going to be a mid-card racer. At best, he might have some fleeting moments of greatness, but it'll be very few and far in between. And that's all I
heard Matty D stomps his ass every week. But, Mr. Stats, go ahead. I'd like to have your comments along with your prediction for the Xfinity Series race this weekend. And you can finish it off with your Cup Series prediction as well.
Okay. I think that I'm not sure whether Jones would switch cars or there would have been a car swap, but there was definitely questions about him until he came down with the win. So I think he saved himself at least the season by doing by winning that race. As far as Cup race for the Xfinity race, you got to go with Christopher Bell until he proves.
So you think he's the second coming of Jesus Christ too? Jesus Christ!
Well, and then the Cup race, you got to go with Kyle Busch, being at his home track, et cetera. That would give anybody an advantage, and that's not to say he doesn't need more. But he's just going into his own track, which means he should shine this week. So he's my pick as far as the Cup race. As far as the trucks, I don't know if we went there yet, but I'll go with Chris's favorite guy, Stewart. I'd like to see him break through and win a race.
Greg,
Hold on one second. Chris's favorite guy? Let's back that up.
I'm sorry. I mean, his name is Fred's favorite guy.
He does his name come first on this show.
That's how I did it this week on the thing. Some weeks I put me first, some weeks I put you first. I want to be the bride and you can be the bridesmaid. I agree with Stats. I think that I don't remember who he said for the Xfinity Series, but I'm going to go with Christopher Bell, and I'm going to go with Stewie because I really want to see Stewie do well, and I want to see Johnny, God bless America, Johnny Sauter, go into the wall and not qualify for the next round.
God dang, man. That hurts, man. I mean, it really
because
does.
Because I don't think that he should have been in the chase to start with after his little incident with that snot-nosed little punk.
Austin Hill.
I
agree. NASCAR kind of dropped the ball on that one. But, I've predicted the downfall of Johnny Sauter. I don't – God bless America, Johnny Sauter. God bless you, good Johnny Sauter. Go race late models up in Wisconsin and – go where you can win, because obviously I believe your time's up in the truck series. I'm going for Brett Moffitt, man, the mustache guy. There's a lot of watermelon heroes out there, but every good guy's got to have a villain, and the mustache guy normally he plays a perfect villain. Brett Moffitt, he'll go out there and he'll get the win in the truck series, in the Xfinity series. That has been the question. I've really been impressed by Chase Briscoe. I think that he's knocking on the door, and could be the next
big time social mover up, you know, the rest of the competition in the coming year. But you know, I'm just going to have to stay with his teammate right now, Cole Custer. Cole Custer for the win at the Xfinity Series, Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Craig, I don't remember who you said on the Cup side. I believe you said Jimmy Johnson?
Nope, I said Kyle Busch.
Kyle Busch. So I'm going up against two Kyle Busches here. You know, I want to go with Kurt Busch. I really do, you know, just because y'all say Kyle Busch. But, you know, once again, I got to dig into my hat. I got to pull out a name. And that name is going to be the 42 car, Kyle Larson. I know that y'all are going to be like, what? But this is a high groove racetrack. Larson likes to ride up against the wall. Larson's run well at Las Vegas in the past. I think that he's going to have his A game set, and Larson's going to go out there, and he's going to be the best Chevrolet in the field this coming up week. I know you guys probably thought I was going to go with Harvick, and I hate to turn my back on the Blue Ovals, and I'm not. I do believe that they'll have a strong run. But there's just something tells me that Larson, this is going to be his race, man. This is going to be where he breaks out. I really would not be surprised to see Kyle Larson in the Final Four. I think his breakout year is still yet to come. But most of the time when these guys get into a more competitive situation where, you know, it really matters, that's where true champions arise. And I'm not predicting Kyle Larson to be a champion this year. But I think that his success will be even greater over the next several years as well. So Kyle Larson, man, he's the guy I'm going with this weekend. I think that I get a lot of boos for that, and I like it because most of the time when I go off the wall and pick somebody, I seem to have something going there, and they either wind up in the wall or they wind up having a really good run. Most of the time they don't win. My picks don't win most of the time, but there's always this moment where my heart beats real fast, because Stuart Friesen did it to me for about a year when I was picking him. That, oh, he's going to win, look. And then, boom, they hit the wall or caught up in a crash or finished in the top five, you know. But, hey, hate me if you want to, Kyle Larson. Maybe he'll be driving the McDonald's car this weekend. I'm not sure of the paint scheme. So NASCAR Heat 4 comes out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Anybody running to the GameStop or to the Play Store and purchasing
yes.
this game?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't have it budgeted in this week, but I will definitely try to have it within the next week or two as they get the kinks and the bugs out of it and allow the competition to win some races before I log in. Because once I get there, flag of old caution, flag of caution, he gets it done on the PS4, guys. So if you're following us, like us. Of course, we want to thank all of the people that are surrounding us. They help support this show, Mr. CJ Sports, the 110 Nation Sports blog and Facebook page, guys like Craig Moore and Moore to Music, the people that keep me employed, you know, Why Not Motorsports Park and my longtime friend Donald Parker down at Hattiesburg Speedway. Support your local tracks, guys. Our season's winding down very fast. Nothing but big races kind of left on the schedule all the way to October, mid-November. Of course, there's really no exact off time. I did notice this year that the Dome race is a week before Christmas. I think that that's a little bit I didn't like that week at all. I liked it when it was right next to PRI, which was the week before. I think it was last year. It was the week before PRI, Performance Racing Industry up in Indianapolis. So a lot of great racing left in front of us. I won't be back at the racetrack myself until October. Just go out there and support the tracks that are still open. And make sure that you are watching NASCAR on TV. If anybody missed the show tonight because they were watching the Democratic debate, guess what? You just stay there. We don't need you listening to our show. That goes for – I'm not even lying. If the Democratic
debate was more important tonight than the show, then you're probably not going to be listening to this show anyway. So for everybody else, we gave you something to do so you didn't have to watch that trash. Is there any Democrats at the table? Mike, are you a Democrat?
No, I basically was a Republican for a long time, and now I just go by the I don't affiliate myself with a party. The only reason I did that back in the day was I worked for the town where I lived in. So, you know, then you had to. But I basically go with, you know, names and people, and not necessarily parties.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not trying to discriminate against anybody, and I know that your choice is your choice. But like I said, I'm not too worried about that. We lost any listeners tonight to the Democratic debate. I just wanted to put that out there, that insignificance one day when this is listened to 50 years down the road and me and Craig are finally famous when we're dead. when they find this in somebody's archives or it starts replaying on some internet channel, maybe in space, who knows, aliens will hear us or something. But anyway, we're not going to be famous in this lifetime, and me and Craig Moore both know it. We've accepted it already. Craig Moore is digging a little bit harder than I am. Hey, we thank you for taking your time to listen to the show on this Thursday night evening. We can't even get Mr. CJ Sports on the show anymore, so I guess
he's in love.
Yeah. Ooh. We call that poodling.
I want to bring this up. It's really, really important. I want to give a huge shout-out and congratulations. We had him on with his little brother a couple of weeks ago, Tanner Warner. Got his first win the other night. And a sportsman, I believe it was at Glen Ridge. And congratulations to Tanner. That is awesome. He is just 15 or 16 years old, I believe. Congratulations to him. See, folks, when you're on Race Chat Live, you end up in victory lane. Not really, but...
Well, I mean, considering I do the interviews sometimes, I guess that is true.
No, that sit down. Another thing real quick, like I said, next week, Luke Rakowski is going to join us at 8:30. He's going to talk about the Lawnmower Association race that he is promoting. He is the promoter for October 12th in Charleston, New York, and this Saturday we've got my radio show Swap Shop. You can listen to that. I want to thank Mike for listening, tuning in each Saturday morning on WCSS1490.com. You can tune in and listen to my ramblings for almost 2 hours, and along with some callers that are selling stuff that's no longer important to them. And then Saturday afternoon, got another thing to do at a local diner. And then Saturday night, we take it back to the 80s at a local establishment. But more importantly, on Saturday, our Cameron celebrates his 15th birthday. So he's no longer, next year he'll be wanting to buy a car. So happy birthday to our son Cameron. And then Sunday, we've got a fundraiser for an organization we are on the board for, and Cameron's birthday party. So that's about it.
All right.
Everything happened in this part of New York State.
Sounds good. And Stats, thank you for being a special guest on the show here tonight. We've still got Chaz Thompson that's going to be on before the end of the month, and looking forward to talking with him. Of course, a lot of big things, a lot of big stories still yet to come, and we'll be glad to bring it to you each Thursday night, as we always have, on Race Chat Live. Mr. CJ Sports, you can go ahead and send out that outro music. Is it called intro music or outro music? I'm not really sure. I need more snare in my headphones. I don't have enough snare. Thank you guys. Congratulations for making it to another episode of Race Chat Live with Chris and Craig, and thank you to the 110 Nation Sports Blog for giving us the opportunity to fill the internet airwaves with our rubbish.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.